What up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in again to The Human Occurrence. I'm your host, Brent Phipps. I'd first off like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this beautiful land, past, present, and future. We've got a really interesting podcast coming your way today. We're going to be interviewing a 28-year-old paramedic that's worked in the UK and Australia. And just like police officers, paramedics are usually the first on a scene of an accident and an assault. They are called to offer medical assistance and life-saving help. And yet it can be one of the most dangerous professions you can get into. So once again, buckle up, get ready, because this podcast is going to be amazing. Welcome to the show.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
Oh man, it's I've been really excited about it because you know, we caught up a little bit on the phone and I was like, no, don't tell me too much. Let's save that for the podcast to make it juicy. Yeah. But look, if anyone who's tuning in, I'll just give you a bit of a backstory quickly about our history. Me and Rowan is basically we met each other at we used to work at BP Odigo. I don't know if you started at Suffolk Park first, did you, or no?
I was Odigo, and then they just
got
on with you. They're like, come look at this sack pad.
That's right. So Odigo Odigo is the BP service station in town, and at the time it was pretty much the gateway to Byron. Everyone used to come in. And that was like the main servo before Maddie lost it and it changed to more of a corporate feel. But Rowan and I really kicked it off there. We were professionals at stacking chips and the fridge, the drink fridge, and cleaning toilets. You know what? Thinking back onto that time, and I don't know if you can relate to this, but that job actually really taught me how to chop wood and carry water. Just to just to do a job, to create a lifestyle, you know, and that it taught me a lot. I was like, when I was there, I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, and everyone used to come in, and you probably got the same thing. Like, what are you doing with yourself? You know, you're working at a servo and all this shit. But for me, it played such a significant role in where I am today, in just the lessons it taught me, how to chop wood and carry water, just to work. And I met everybody, as you probably did. Everyone that came in into town really went through Odigo. Plus, I'd like to make a mention that microphone on the forecourt was a game changer for me and you. It was it definitely boosted my ego. But I had a lot of fun with that, and I think you did too. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think, it just taught me to, like, talk to people. Just talk to, like, 50,000 people a day.
Yeah, it was nuts.
My job now is all just 90% talking to people. So,
yeah, right. That's interesting. So let's dive into that. So I did a bit of an introduction and explained to people that you're a paramedic and you worked in the UK a bit, but I wanted to start off on ground zero with you. And talk about your studies. Like so you left Odigo, we don't need the full story of that, but why did you get into that? What was the driving force behind that?
I don't know, to be honest, man. Like, people ask me this all the time. I don't really know what actually pushed me towards it. My mother was a nurse. I had some friends that were in paramedics and I'd sort of been around health, but I just sort of picked up everyone knew what they wanted to do in high school and I didn't know. I was just skating through.
Yeah.
Working at Odigo, I'm not really going anywhere. And then I just sort of picked up a book one day and paramedic. And I thought I'd give it a go, and turns out it was just something that I really loved. I liked helping people. I liked talking to people. They're the standard responses, but generally that's pretty true for me. But in terms of, like, always wanting to be a medic, like, there's so many people out there that were like that born to do it. I wanted to do it since I came out the womb.
Yeah. It's not how it kind of plays out, right?
Yeah, it just sort of, I fell into it in a way. And now I just, yeah, I love it. Can't really see myself doing much else.
Great. And where did you study?
I studied in Queensland, up here in QUT.
Right. Is that a specialised thing for paramedics? Was that a uni or what is that?
Oh, yeah. So that's a uni. Paramedics used to be like an apprenticeship style, like diploma.
Right.
And then as the sort of career has evolved and progressed, they've turned it more into a uni-based system. There are still some like diploma, apprentice style pathways still going, but yeah, mostly it's all uni now. Mm. QUT was one of the few unis that were doing it at the time. But now everywhere does it. It's like super popular degree now.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of, so how long did it go for, the course?
So the course is 3 years and then you've got like a consolidation year where you sort of work with fully qualified paramedics and they just keep an eye on you. And then you've got to do like an assessment or something at the end of that year just to show that you're not an idiot. You're doing. But yeah, it takes a while, and I mean, I'm still learning now.
Yeah, as you would be, right? Like anything, you're forever a white belt. So when you went through your training, like what sort of training how did they train you to be in really intense situations in terms of you being calm? Like, was that on your last year when you kind of did more hands-on work, or was there a unit? Like, that's what I was really thinking about last night. I'm like, how does an organization train someone to be in a situation where they've never been in? You know, emotions are high, it can be intense, and you've got to be on a calm platform, so to speak. How do they train that?
So that's pretty interesting, really. Because when I started, I was sort of in that period where they were just sort of learning that you can't just throw people into these situations and be like, you know, deal with it or like sink or swim.
All right.
And so when I came in, there was a bit of that, like the uni, they would touch on it. There wasn't like a unit per se that taught you how to deal with insane, heavy situations. The way they assessed you sort of got you to learn not to freak out. You would do these practical assessments and you would do it in front of your whole class. So at uni, I mean, it's a dummy. So you're not really scared about killing a dummy.
A dummy, yeah.
In the room's going to think you're an idiot. So you learn to sort of manage your emotions there. But there was very little. You just sort of worked out your own process and on how to stay calm. Generally, I think what the mantra they taught you was like, be a duck, like go on the surface with little flappy feet underwater.
Right.
But that was about as far as it went. When I went through uni, it was, yeah, anecdotal sort of stories they tell you to try and help you learn how to manage your emotions in those states, but you just learned on the job. Whereas now they're doing that a lot better.
Okay. And what they put like different modules in that, or?
Well, I still don't know what they're doing at uni for it, but I know that the ambulance services themselves they're helping to deal with the emotions post a traumatic event and things like that, or traumatic events, which in turn I find tends to make people calmer when the event actually comes around.
Right. Yeah. It kind of sets you up.
Yeah, but they're still learning. This whole concept of like paramedics just being able to deal with everything and be calm all the time. That's just something that we've done. Like personally, like the services are just now learning that they need some input into that, and they're getting quite good at it, but it's a really evolving process, I think.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Like, when I think of it, my logical brain thinks of it, I think, how do you train someone for situations that could be, there's be so many variables to a situation, right? Like, and, you know, different situations, you know, it's either going to be like, you know, an accident or, you know, murders or something like that. I'd imagine it'd be really difficult to train for that, you know, until you kind of got some experience under your belt. You kind of really rely off your own guidance system, I'd imagine. Is that how you kind of work? Like, you've got some experience under your belt and then you kind of just work from you?
Yeah. And I would say 90% of the paramedics out there are doing that now. They're either working off their own experience or the experience of whoever they're working with.
Okay.
So I was quite lucky. I had I just had a really good run of mentors in my first ever station up in Brisbane.
Yeah.
And they all had like super different styles and super different like methods of operating in these stressful sort of environments. And I just sort of picked and chose what I
what worked
for me, you know. For me, it's just don't get your heart rate above 60. Just sort of sit there and be methodical, calm. Make a joke if you can. It sort of grounds you well. But yeah, just whereas other people like to move fast, like, and that works for them. But you do. You take your own experience and you sort of mold that into how you want to operate. Like, and as I say, you're learning every time. Like, I'll go to a new experience, and the next time I see that, I'll have a different way of dealing with it based on what I've done last month or year or whatever.
It's like you just keep adding to your arsenal, right? And you keep getting better based off, you know, your work experience and what you've done. Are paramedics high in demand? Like, is it like when you left uni to get into a job? Tell us about that process. Was it difficult or was it easy? Or
for me, it was quite easy. There was a shortage, or a local shortage. So Queensland didn't have as many as they needed. So we got quite a easy transition from uni to a job. That is entirely different now. The unis are pumping out thousands of paramedics for hundreds of jobs. So there is just the market's completely flooded with paramedics now. So unfortunately for those students, it's not as easy as it was for me. And a lot of them end up abroad. So the UK employs a huge number of Australian paramedic students.
Why is that? Just because we've got the numbers?
We have the numbers. We've got really good training, which crosses over quite well to their system. Like, there's not a huge gap in their knowledge. And their protocols are relatively similar to ours. Yeah, it's not as popular a job in the UK. I think working for the NHS is not for everyone. So, yeah, they're happy to take us. And a lot of paramedics now are cutting their teeth in the UK and then returning home.
Okay. And what do you mean by cutting their teeth? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So just like starting out getting the experience. And then returning to Australia once they're qualified and they've done a few years, or just returning to Australia once someone's finally given them a job.
So why do you think there was an influx of people? So from when you started, there wasn't many, but now there's a lot. So is it like, was it trendy to be a paramedic now? Is it like the idea of like, hey, let's study and be a paramedic and I'll save people's lives? And how does that work? Do you know why there was so many people now?
I can only sort of guess. I mean, for a long while, paramedics was one of the health degrees that was bridging into medicine. So a lot of people would go and do paramedics or nursing, and then while they were doing that study to try and get into becoming a doctor.
Right.
And that's still quite popular, and power to those people. I don't have it in me to study that much, but a lot of people do start out as paramedics and end up going into medicine. I don't know what it is that's brought the jump. It could just be as simple as that Ambulance Australia show. Like, everyone's watched that and they're like, oh, look,
right,
look good enough, Mom. let's go give that a go.
I haven't actually watched it, but no, I've heard of it.
I don't watch it. I can't stand it personally.
Is that because it's like way off the mark, or is it just like,
I don't think it's off the mark per se, but it is, it's edited for TV.
Yeah, it would have to be, right?
Yeah, but it's more just get home from work. You don't want to watch more work, you know?
Yeah. I've got you. So tell me, the aim of the game of a paramedic is to stabilize the patient, right? Depending on their condition. Is that it? So you're stabilizing them until you get to the hospital. So depending on what their conditions are, you will pretty much keep them alive until you get to the hospital, and then the doctors take over. Can you talk into that a bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, that's evolving like super rapidly. But yeah, essentially, in a nutshell, paramedic is interim care, emergency care until definitive care. So yeah, it is. It's make them stable enough to get them to hospital.
Mm.
But as I say, that's evolving now. We've got more skills than we did 10 years ago, and in 10 years' time, we'll have more again. And now we're sort of also doing, you know, we're doing social work. We're doing like palliative care is starting to enter our field. We've got extended care paramedics that are doing sort of low acuity work, like stitches and giving antibiotics and stuff, and sort of doing similar to a GP, obviously without the medical background.
Okay.
But some treatments at home where you can leave people at home, or we can refer to other medical services, not necessarily hospital. So that idea that everything goes to hospital is changing.
Mm.
And depending on what state you're in or what country, it depends on what speed that's changing. But yeah, it's evolving. It's not the all emergency care that we used to have, you know, years ago. We just pick people up, put them on a stretcher, and run them to hospital as fast as we could.
It's grown, right? It's got much more advanced.
Yeah, and the idea of stabilizing people has changed as well.
In what regard?
So we've got a ton of therapies that we do now that we never used to. And so this idea of stabilizing can sometimes mean, you know, sitting at home and doing a lot more work than what we used to do before we move them, because we understand that movement stage is probably one of the more dangerous parts of their journey into hospital. So we're doing a lot more before we move patients. But then at the same time, we're also learning that sometimes it's better to just sit on their hands and not do a lot, because what they actually need is hospital. So yeah, it's becoming like, you've got to think more, a lot more than we used to. You've got to really understand where they're going to go once they get to hospital, so that you can sort of manage what you're going to do before they get there.
Yeah, I got you. So when you approach, and this is going to be pretty generalization, hard for you to answer maybe, but when you approach someone who's injured or, you know, who's potentially dying or something like that, you would obviously have a protocol with how you've been taught to approach that situation. But is there any intuition that gets played out in that as your role? So if you go in there with your skill set, Is there any sort of like intuition when you go, oh, okay, no, let's not work on this. Let's work on his arm or something like that. Or is it just straight by step-by-step procedure?
Yeah. So the protocols are there for specific situations. So obviously no matter what it is, there's a protocol to fall back on.
Okay.
You know, I'd like to be perfect at everything and be able to do everything without the protocols, but some things I'm better at than others.
Mm-hmm.
And in those situations, you got a protocol, but in general, it is mostly intuition, experience that gets you started. So you walk in and you might see someone who's not obviously sick, but say who you're working with, they might have seen this before, or they might know a little more about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll know that where to start. Or you might have seen it before and it might not look obvious to everyone that they're super unwell, but they are super unwell.
Mm.
And you can work on that. So it is experience. You know, we learn about it in textbooks, but until you see it, it's quite hard to, it's quite hard to tell what's going on until you've seen it at least once. Most of our job is experience, intuition. You know, after your first year or so, you should have seen a fairly broad mix of medical complaints. And you can sort of, you'll draw on that experience every time you go to a new patient.
Mm-hmm. And so what would you, because you did mention about your strengths there as a paramedic, what would you say your like natural abilities are in terms of your strengths with your skill set?
That's a curly one.
Like your hair.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. And people would, maybe my partners and crewmates that I've had in the past might disagree. But I find I'm comfortable in a trauma situation. That's where my main interest lies.
Mm-hmm.
So I've found myself quite comfortable in that situation. People may disagree and have seen me in a trauma situation and been like, man, that guy is just awful. I generally, if you feel comfortable in the field, you tend to be a lot better at it. And that's sort of where I draw most of my sort of comfort at work. But I would say probably the one I'm least comfortable with is cardiac conditions.
Okay.
Heart attacks and stuff, they're fairly simple, but my knowledge further than that has a gap.
Can you break that down for the people who are listening? So the difference between cardiac and trauma, just so it's clear.
Yeah, so trauma is just any illness relating to some sort of traumatic input on the body. So be it, you know, a stabbing, a car accident, shooting.
Like an impact, so to speak.
Yeah, an impact of sorts. Or violence. So that's trauma, and that involves whatever body system is directly involved. Say you've been stabbed in the chest, then your lungs are an issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it also, there's this big systemic sort of science behind it as well, that we're learning more about now than we used to before, and that's evolving and quite interesting. Whereas cardiac is, you know, it's mostly your heart, but it, again, there's all these systemic issues that stem from the heart.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. And so I would imagine, like, you know, when you first experienced someone passing in front of you, you know, that would have been an adjustment in itself, but how do you How do you process that? Like, is there something that you do like after a shift to kind of unwind or release or, you know, process what you've been through? Because it's kind of like, from what I understand of those situations, there's all sorts of different trauma, right? And it doesn't have to be necessarily to the patient. It can be for the people in the room, anything. Trauma could be from the lightest of things, you know? So you stepping out of that role, going home, and how do you defrag from that and then like kind of clear out and then come back?
A big part of it's the people you work with. So yeah, you see all this, you become very comfortable with death, almost too comfortable sometimes, I think. You sort of catch yourself realizing that, you know, you're just a bit too comfortable. And then you start. So basically every one of us will see death, trauma or dying. And they will, the go-to is to talk to the people directly around you. So after a shift, you may chat with whoever's on station at the time, or you'll often have someone approach you at a certain point during the day, because you know we might go see someone die at 6 in the morning. You've still got 12 hours of your shift left, so
that's hour one.
Yeah, so you will. We're pretty good at looking out for each other. Some of the people I work with are incredible at it. They can just pick when they need to chat. Other than that, you know, you try and sort of distance yourself from work when you're at home. That's what I do anyway. You know, I'm a paramedic while I'm at work, outside of work, try and do something different, you know, go for surf. Just leave work at work and home at home sort of thing.
Yeah, I've got you.
But yeah, the biggest one for me is probably just the people I work with. Without them, it'd be very hard to process what I see or what they see.
And sorry, you go.
And it's not, you know, there's certain jobs that sort of touch everyone. You don't even have to have been at the job, and you know, everyone involved, like, the, you know, certain jobs can rock a whole station. And it just is sort of like a quick reality check that everyone needs a chat, and it'll sort of stem a conversation into our own welfare and mental health and stuff. And you'll notice a lot of, you know, checking in on each other.
Yeah, because that's a couple of weeks. That's, you know, mental health, I would imagine, would be more amplified, right? The whole subject around mental health with paramedics because of what you're exposed to. You know, and I guess that, you know, having that support around you that you did, it's like really, really therapeutic to you, you know, like to be able to actually process some things. And then obviously when you go home, you have that, you know, you take your paramedic hat off and you put your other personal hat on, and then that's it. With and it kind of stems to this question, what do you have any beliefs around death? Like, are you a religious man, or how would you describe that for yourself in terms of what your beliefs are around death?
I think I'm pretty black and white with death, to be honest. I think it's probably, like, I'm not religious whatsoever. And I generally don't sort of believe in an afterlife or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think where my sort of spiritual sort of belief remains is where, like, the people who are left behind, you know, it's more an issue for the people left behind. The person who's dead or dying, like, once they're gone, it's, you know, they're done with it. It doesn't matter. Even if there is, I'm not going to say there isn't an afterlife, I don't have the proof, but even if there is, you know, what's going on with them is no longer an issue. It's us here that
a process in it.
Yeah, we have to keep going with it. So I think that's where most of my focus lies when it comes to dealing with death, is trying to make it as nice as possible for those who have had to process it. You know, it might be their mother or you know, their brother or child or whatever who's passed, but they've passed, you know. So whoever's left behind is the one who sort of needs the help
you know, to actually process that the whole situation.
Yeah. And, you know, they've got months or years of this processing to happen. I'm with them for, you know, 20 minutes. So I'm not going to leave after that 20 minutes and they're going to go, oh, well, fantastic.
Yeah.
So, that's done. They got a long journey, but in that 20 minutes, you can really sort of shape the rest of their journey through it. If you're lucky, you can make a big difference. If you're not, you know, unfortunately, we can't always make people feel better. And I think it's sort of tough to expect ourselves to be able to, in 20 minutes, sort out somebody's entire experience of death. But you can assist, you know, and again, they're getting so much better at teaching that. But really, the experience is the only thing that's going to make you good at it.
Yeah. Because, you know, in my eyes, you guys have wings, you know, like you're in such a important role, not just in stabilizing people and saving lives, but like you just mentioned, like you mentioned, it's just 20 minutes, but man, in those moments, 20 minutes feels like 20 hours, you know? And you do, there's such an influence in those moments that you can play a part of. I really take my hat off to you, Ron, because it's not everyone gets juiced up from this sort of stuff, you know? And I think that the fact that you can go into these situations with the man you are and have that view on things is really special. And it's just phenomenal, man. Like, you know, for me, I couldn't do that. You know, I couldn't be a paramedic. You know, I think that give it a shot. But I just, you know, I think, you know, what you're good and not good at, or what you're interested and not interested at. So, but what I'm interested in is that and it kind of goes back to the question before, but in terms of death and the procedures around when someone dies, can you talk into that a bit? But is it different from the UK to Australia in terms of the procedures you have to go through? So if you go to a scene, you try to stabilize them, it doesn't happen, they die. Is it the same procedures that happen? Yeah. Can you talk into that a bit?
I mean, so at a basic level, the Western world, as far as I understand, we'll just speak about Australia and the UK. So at the base of it, they're similar. You know, the death is suspicious or it's not suspicious. It's expected or it's unexpected. And the procedure is generally the same. Like, obviously, local procedures are going to change depending on the police input, coronial input, and us as a service. But yeah, if it is suspicious or if it is unexpected, we can't really call if it's suspicious. Sometimes it's obvious. But if it's unexpected, the police are notified. And then we sort of, in a way, we sort of treat it as a crime scene until otherwise told.
Okay.
You know, once they're dead and it's unexpected, it's police. That's their realm. And we sort of take a step back. We tell them what we've seen, and they go from there. So unfortunately, like, we don't get a lot of input into how we can sort of manage that person once they've died, for the benefit of the family, you know. So we got to just leave them on the floor where we've been doing CPR, and they've got tubes coming out of their mouth and IV lines in, and it looks quite, it's a violent procedure. CPR and trying to revive someone is quite violent. So yeah, it is. When it's unexpected, it's a little harder to manage that for the people around. For us, it's quite easy. You know, we just step back and it's police territory now. When it's expected, we get a bit more leeway, and again, it changes from country to country. But you know, we can just sort of make them comfortable as they die. We can sort of have the family involved. You know, we can make it as nice an experience for everyone as possible. And we're going to see death at work. That's just health. You either see it or you see it occurring. So it is nice to be able to be involved with those who are palliative, who are going to die, and everybody's aware of it. It's nice to be part of that sort of their journey, I suppose. And you do get that rare chance to have a positive input into somebody dying. And in the UK, I think they had evolved quite well. I was able to actually palliate a patient once, which for me was quite special. By palliate, I mean like refer on to a palliative care. They weren't actually a part of a palliative care team, and it was in it. And I got the opportunity to sort of start that ball rolling, which here at the minute is not as easy to do.
Why is that?
I don't really know. There's a lot of people working quite hard to make palliative care more normal in Australia, more talked about, more considered. And those people are doing great work. But for whatever reason, it has not, it just hasn't evolved as rapidly here. Or at least from a paramedic standpoint, it hasn't evolved as rapidly. Palliative care Australia-wide, I'm sure, is fantastic. And when we do get to be involved as a paramedic here, it's also fantastic. It's just we don't see it as often, I don't think. In the UK, you had quite a... And it could just be because there was, you know, 50,000 more people per square kilometre in the UK.
Yeah. What is the population of the UK? It's like...
God knows.
It's a lot more than the 27 million that lives in Australia, though.
Yeah, well, I think we got told when I started in London that the population of Australia commutes in and out of London every day.
Wow.
So, it was...
That's a lot.
I mean, he didn't back it up with any evidence.
He just spurted out a one-liner.
Yeah, he just said it. So he could be full of shit, but it was a fucking people. there's a lot of people on those tubes in the morning.
How long were you in the UK for?
3 years, 3 to 8 years.
Yeah, and what made you come home?
It was my time. You know, it's busy over there. It was time to come back, time to be with family, try something new, you know?
And is being paramedic a well-paying job? Is there a difference going over to the UK? Do you get paid more there, or is it just, it's in more demand?
Unfortunately, it's not a well-paying job in the UK. Although, there's a whole social system in the UK that is different. So basically, as a comparison to what we make here, the UK is probably not the best paying job. But over there, you know, you are it's probably good money compared to everybody else, or compared to a large portion of London. It's probably very good. And I'm not gonna say it's a poorly paid job. It's a very well paid job. But like anyone working in any field, it could always be better.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone wants kind of more money, but it's so generally speaking, you do get good pay for what you're doing.
Yeah, I think so. There's talk of a pay rise at the minute, but there always is. In every job, I'm sure there always is. But yeah, I'm paid quite well.
Great.
I think.
So you, at the start of the podcast, you mentioned that you see yourself doing this for quite some time. How do you work your way up in your industry?
There's lots of avenues now. For the progression that I'm going through or wanting to go through, I'm doing some further learning at uni.
What's that again? Sorry.
I'm doing some more like further learning at uni, doing a master's, to try and sort of boost my knowledge and hopefully move me up through the career progression, you know, through an intensive care paramedic up to wherever. But it's just applying, you know, you apply for positions within the service and some services, they'll pick you and they'll train you up and get you ready for that role. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, you know, some self-directed stuff like what I'm learning, you know, could just be to boost up your resume when you do apply for that other position, or, you know, in some states and services, you need a master's to progress to an ICP or intensive care paramedic.
Okay. Yeah, ICP.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Hey, I'm just having a flashback here and it's completely off subject, but I love your hair and your beard. You've got a really well-established beard and your hair's quite long, man. I don't remember it being that long.
No, I think I had short hair when I was working with you.
Well, that was you weren't working for me. We were working for Matt Golan at the time. I didn't own anything on the servo. I wouldn't have been cleaning the toilets every day at bloody 5:30 in the morning if I was.
Oh, you never clean toilets. You always serve me.
you ask Kevin. I was always willing to clean the toilets, but your hair's long, man. It's good. It's great. So it's been a couple of years. You've been growing it.
Yeah, I sort of change it up every few years. You know, just something different.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. All right. So one of my final questions is, so if someone's listening to this that is going in the direction or has interest in your field and wanting to do that, is there any sort of, you know, advice or guidance that you could give someone that was really interested to pursue what you're doing?
I mean, just go to uni, you know, pretty much. It's a uni degree now, so get yourself into uni. But in terms of sort of preparing yourself for it, you know, find an interest in health, find an area of health that you're interested in and involve yourself in it, do a bit of research, work out how much you love being well rested and sleeping, because that's something you got to give up.
yeah so the shifts are long, aren't they?
Yeah so 12-hour shifts
with a break,
generally went into 13-14-hour shifts. So yeah, just work out what your priorities are, and get into uni, start applying early. You can move around a lot more with it now than you used to be able to. You know, you can travel the world with it now if you want.
Depending on regulations, right? Because UK and Australia are quite close. But I'd imagine that you couldn't go to, I don't know, it's not like you could go to Spain. Could you do it in Spain? Like, do you have to speak the native tongue to actually be a paramedic?
Yeah, so in some countries, they're going to obviously be like, well, you know, you need to speak the native tongue to work here. Mm. Others are like, they're majority English speaking anyway. And they'll have you. It's if they want you to learn more, they'll tell you what you need to do. I know a lot of people in different countries now who are working as paramedics that started in Australia. So Canada, Germany, the UK, Holland.
Sweet.
Yeah, you can move around a lot more. It's a completely different career to when I started 6 years ago. Yeah, it's very rapidly evolving.
Like you said, it's high in demand, right?
Yeah. With how it evolves, we're becoming sort of more important in the healthcare system. We're sort of taking the burden off other areas of health now. So, I mean, watch this space. We might be completely different in 10 years. We might no longer even be emergency care. We'll be doing, you know, fixing people up at home.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, thanks so much for coming on, man, and describing to us what you do and don't do and how you process things. I the best thing about this podcast for me is that I learn a shit ton about and I said that to you yesterday, but I truly mean that, because I get really interesting people on like yourself. And now I know a bit more about what goes on in your world and paramedics. So thank you so much for coming on, man. And yeah, I appreciate you showing up.
You're right, man.
Have you got a big day ahead of you?
I'll probably just go for a surf and do a bit of study, man. Nothing.
Because it's your day off. It's your day off.
It is my day off. I don't go back till Saturday, so I got the week.
Oh, great. Well, soak it up, man. Go have a surf, relax. Just like me, I'm in a forest, you know.
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty funny. Sweet, mate. All right, well, enjoy your day. Thanks for coming on. And
no worries, big dog.
And let's chat soon.
Yeah, cheers for having me, man. Have a good one.
All right, brother. Talk to ya.
See you, bro.